Testing, testing. Okay. This is Life Vow Sesshin, January 2024, Talk 3. What is your life about? How do you want to be? What do you want to vow? What is your life about? How do you want to be in this world, in this life? And what is your life telling you? Ask Me by William Stafford. Sometime when the river is ice, ask me mistakes I have made. Ask me whether what I have done is my life. Others have come in their slow way into my thought, and some have tried to help or to hurt. Ask me what difference their strongest love or hate has made. I will listen to what you say. You and I can turn and look at the silent river and wait. We know the current is there, hidden, and there are comings and goings from miles away that hold the stillness exactly before us. What the river says, that is what I say. So appreciating everyone's efforts in the Zendo and in your small group discussions. As we do this discovery, this is a process of discovery. Please continue this. Hold this phrase of let your life speak as a guide to your process. Let your life speak. As the Quaker Parker Palmer has said, before you tell your life what you intend to do with it, listen to what it intends to do with you. And so that really is what we're turning towards is what is already here. So what we've done so far, and this is an iterative process. So we may investigate, we may have done what we did on day two doesn't mean, you know, this isn't school, right? We completed the pop quiz or completed the assignment and then we're done, because this is about our life and our own self-discovery. So you can return to some of these questions, and I hope you do. So the first thing and the fundamental thing in sitting by the silent river is paying attention, which is what we've been doing in the Zendo. Because the first part of life vows is life. And so what is life? What is this life? What is your life? So the question, what is my life? What is alive? What is this? And so the paying attention part of our direct experience isn't the part of the process that's in words. It's the silent part. But it isn't a dead silence. Like the poem says, it's covered in ice, but things flow from miles away through space and time. but they all are here. So what is this life is can only be answered in the present moment. It can only be answered right now, right where you sit. So we do this by paying attention to the vivid aliveness of this moment, the rise and fall of the breath in the body. Feeling all the changing touches on the surface of the body as your clothing covers the body. Noticing just the flowing touches. The warmth of the body. Feeling the breath, the coolness of in-breath and warmth of out-breath. Feeling the tingling aliveness of your body. Sparkling, twinkling. This is essential. So there's also the aspect of that we've been doing, which is intelligent reflection, which is the word in Pali is chanda, intelligent reflection. This is an important part of practice. Zen practice isn't about becoming dull at all. That we can bring intelligent reflection that comes from a place of the mind settling down, becoming becoming slowly but surely less reactive, seeing how the mind works, being able to interrupt or interrupt thoughts that are extraneous or not helpful. Noticing when the feeling tone might be that could be worked with. So this intelligent reflection is we bring the thinking mind into the mind of discernment and curiosity. And we brought it into areas we've looked at. Why did you come to this retreat? Something brought you here. Something brought you to a week-long silent retreat. Something brought you to the monastery. What was that? What is that? What draws you to practice? We looked at our day-to-day vows. How do we spend our time? What's important to us? We've looked at inherited vows. Reactive vows and overreactive vows, inspired vows. So this is important because then we look beyond our life as if it's just this sort of single solitary atom that we can see. It's one way that points to the way that we're embedded in a network of relationships, this network. This net, Indra's net. If we look around, we can see vows everywhere and how they ripple out. And that was the invitation at breakfast this morning to look in your bowls. If you look in your bowl, you can see a farm worker's vow to give their family a better life. Leave their home country, travel in dangerous circumstances, do backbreaking work. And that shows up as nourishment for your body. So we don't know how our own vows will ripple out. That farm worker was just looking to take care of their family. And here we are with an alive, nourished body. So we don't know what the effects will be of our vows. But if we do open up and see how we're surrounded by vows and supported by them, all we can be is grateful. So in our discernment today, we'll look at some things like, what are our gifts? What are our talents? What do we bring? What comes forward in our life just as it is? Playing music, singing, organizing people. What qualities do we have? We bring forth optimism, humor, studiousness, determination, curiosity. So what's already here, not what needs to be improved? One of my favorite pith phrases from Hogan early in practice was, Zen is not a self-improvement project. It's an awakening project. And so we're waking up to these aspects of ourselves, not looking to cut parts out of ourselves. And of course, and when we have a vow, especially a big vow, to help others, people benefit, and we somehow, I know in my own experience, I think I'm nicer to be around than when I first started practice, at least I hope so, less reactive. But it wasn't from a place, it was the side effect of the practice. It's almost like the less you try and do it, the more of an effect there is. Anyway, that's an aside. So we'll look at our gifts, talents, large and small. And who or what do we love? Of course, we have the people that we know personally that we love. But there's something in us that gets drawn to certain things. Some people nurture plants. Some people love children. The forest, oceans, animals. So these talents, these gifts, these aspects or qualities that we already have, who can we offer them to? What can I offer and to whom? This isn't a should, this is discovery. It's like, I have these tools and this is what I love. So then the other question that we'll talk about is really life purpose. What is your life about? And just really spending time with that. So how do I want to be in the world? It's another way to ask this question. So I thought I might share some vows and give a sense of things. First of all, you don't have to have only one vow. So if you're feeling pressure, like, oh, what's the one thing? You can have lots of vows. So this is a wonderful example from a Japanese Zen master from the 1700s, Tori Zenji. And we chant in the evening Tori Zenji's Bodhisattva vow. These are some different vows. So his vows are, first, I vow not to give up on in my spiritual quest. Second, I vow not to waver in faith in the Dharma. Third, I vow to continue even if I encounter miserable states. Fourth, I vow to help others. Fifth, I vow to penetrate all the koans or life questions I meet. Sixth, I vow to give up my obsession with the body. Seventh, I vow to refine my functioning in accord with truth. Eighth, I vow to always cultivate a generous heart. Ninth, I vow not to become self-centered. And 10th, I vow to pass on any understanding. So as we consider this also, your vows don't have to be perfect. In fact, they won't be perfect. That's not even a word that matters in this. And how you express them changes as we learn more. Because of impermanence, because of flow, because of the dynamism of our life, of this life force that moves through this experience, and because of practice, our understanding changes. So we're always learning and experiencing. So there are people who have done this who've done this over and over again and refine their vows over time as they learn more about themselves. So an example of this is one of my personal vows was I vow to found a place of Zen practice in Portland. And I also gave myself 10 years to do it. Now, of course, I wasn't going to do that alone, but that was one of the things that was really motivating for me when I first became part of the Sangha and was really galvanized by the Sangha and who I was practicing with. My teachers were inspiring to me. So I said, I vow to found a Zen place of Zen practice in Portland. So we did that. I thought that was a big, huge vow. I suppose it was. So then it's like, well, what is that vow done? And so now the way I express that vow is I vow to serve the Sangha, Heart of Wisdom Zen Temple and Great Vow Zen Monastery, in whatever way is needed. So the situation changed, my consciousness changed, my commitment changed, it deepened. In my situation, and my view became wider. I think the fundamental part of that vow is I vow to serve the Sangha, and then I make it specific, Heart of Wisdom and Great Vow, and that way that when I'm trying to make a decision about things, I know that that's where my energy goes in those places, as opposed to other places. So I vow to serve the Sangha in whatever way is needed. And I think underneath all of that is one of the precepts, which is I vow to do good and do good for others. It's one of the fundamental Zen Buddhist precepts. So as you consider vows, your own, it's helpful to consider these inherited vows and reactive vows. We may find that our ideas about purpose or direction is shaped or has been shaped by the expectations of others, our family, our peers, our society. And how could it not? We're embedded, of course. So we want to be gentle with ourselves. If there's a letting our life speak, if there's something that wants to speak that maybe even surprises us, invite it out, invite it to speak. Don't let the inner critic, the perfectionist, be part of it. They're not helpful. Ignore them. Just ignore them. So attending these questions in the stillness and the silence of the Zendo, and then coming together and giving voice as best we can, as best we know in that moment. You and I can turn and look at the silent river and wait. So another way is to consider is like, what is your heart's aspiration? It's how Hogan phrases this vow question, this vow. So I thought I might share my personal vows, sort of revised and shifted and shaped. So there's 5 vows. And then there's a bunch of them, other ones, but these are. So the first vow is, I vow to awaken for the sake of others. That's the first vow. I vow to help guide others to awaken even before me. I vow to see what the ancestors saw with this body, this heart, and this mind. I vow to serve the Sangha in whatever way is needed. And I vow to uphold my marriage vows to Jomon. And then I ask that Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, ancestors, and wise ones influence my heart and mind in order to support these vows. So I've been inspired. We talked about inspired vows. And so the first 2 vows about awakening for the sake of others are ones that have become, I hope, more and more genuine in my life as I've practiced over the years. And both have been expressed by the ancestors and my own teachers. So I think with that, I become more and more acquainted with what those vows mean. It's a learning process. So these vows, these 5 vows, are ones that I repeat, I say to myself every morning when I sit down for Zazen. And so that provides a direction for, it's easy to wander into the Zendo and sit down and say, what am I doing here? Or to kind of just be groggy or kind of floating around. And so this, the vow, repeating, having your vows, sitting down and asking for help, really, really helps. This was a practice that was taught to us by Dan Brown, who's one of the figures in the people in the who's been an inspiration for the teaching in this monastery, which is to, when you sit down, say your vows, or at least remind yourself why you're practicing, and ask for help. So, a big vow. Why not make one? Why not make a big vow? Why hold back? Maybe there's something big that's moving through you. And we repeat some big vows here. We'll say them in just a few moments, the four bodhisattva vows. So those are, beings are numberless, I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable, I vow to embody it. So this could be your own guide. This is from a previous one of these retreats, and probably it has, I think it has Hogan's fingerprints on it, just by the phrasing. So one way to think of it is, there are many problems in the world, I vow to solve one. That's a goal. There are many obstacles to doing this, I vow to deal with them. That's obstacles. There are many sources of wisdom, information, and inspiration, I vow to discover them. So those are resources. There are many ways of being false, I vow to live the truth, which is walk the path. So you might consider goals, you know, where we want to orient. What's the North Star? What is moving through you? What do you love? What you might encounter, what you might meet, and being willing to do so. What resources you might require, who can help, who you can join. And we'll talk about that too, joining in a, not today, but in the next day or so, we'll talk about joining vows. And then walk the path. What kind of path? What do you need to do in order to walk the path on these, on whatever your vows are? And it may be this path right here. Might be another one. That's for you to discover. So I want to close with another reading from Tori Zenji on vow. So Tori Zenji was a Zen teacher, or a Zen master from the 1700s in Japan. And he wrote this amazing treatise called The Undying Lamp of Zen. And one of the things that's so amazing about it is just the sense of urgency that's in it. It's almost overwhelming, how urgent his writing is. And part of the reason for that is that he had been studying with his teacher, the monumental Zen teacher, Hakuin Zenji. And Tori was one of his students, and Tori thought he was dying at age 30. He was sick. They had no idea how to help him, and he was dying. So he basically wrote this thinking that he was dying. He eventually recovered. And he went to, he brought this to his teacher, Hakuin, saying, take a look at this. He was considering burning it. And he took it to his teacher, and his teacher said, no, please don't do this. It will be of help to people. So maybe it will be a little bit of help to us. Tori says, the correct course for cultivating practice is based on vows. The correct course for cultivating practice, Zen meaning Zen practice, is based on vows. If the strength of your vows is deep and weighty, demons and outsiders cannot disturb you. If the strength of your vows is slight and superficial, you encounter many obstacles. He goes on to say, talking about the four Bodhisattvas, he says, now the strength of vows is rooted in compassion. Those who seek their own benefit all remain within a small perspective. For this reason, the practice of the four universal vows first makes liberation of others the number one pledge, along with clarifying your own nature, cutting off the root of afflictions, studying all teachings, and carrying out the activities of bodhisattvas, so compassion and knowledge are completely fulfilled. This is called the way of Buddhas. There may be those who, on reading such a discourse on the power of vows, or listening to a Dharma talk, who may mistakenly imagine they have no part in it and cannot follow it in practice. What they don't realize is that this is an expedient for developing an initial attitude of faith as an ancient precedent for inspiring the initial outset of practice. Mature or not, it's all a matter of long-term practice. One should progress in study as much as possible. The same is true of the vows of students of the way. Although incapable at first, eventually they'll succeed. Even if temporarily discouraged by obstructions caused by ingrained habits, if you can keep your vows in mind, you will return to your original mind before long. For this reason, those who are basically lazy ought to rely on these vows all the more. Those whose faith is shallow ought to rely on these vows all the more. Those who are dull and ignorant ought to rely on these vows all the more. Those whose perception of nature is clear ought to rely on these vows all the more. Those whose intellectual functions are independent ought to rely on these vows all the more. So in other words, everyone, all of us, we're all under that umbrella. From the first inspiration in the beginning to the final consummation in the end, all depends upon the practical power of these vows. Recite them outwardly, keep mindful of them inwardly, pray earnestly every day, think about them a time and again. Their unconscious influence, like fog moistening clothes, like fragrance adhering to things, naturally enables you to attain the degree of consciousness of the Buddhas and masters. So self-help and helping others are both fulfilled. Thank you.